Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, July 2nd, 2026. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Decatur Area Arts Council, Spreading Art, Kindness, Joy. Kids Camp Teaches Power of Creativity, Community Connection, by Danette Beckett, Decatur. 12-year-old Border Collie Lady Mary visited the Decatur Area Arts Council's Art of Kindness Camp to receive a gift, a colorful tie-dye bandana. "We go to schools and we do educational programs," said the dog's owner, Kim Schwabach, with People Understanding Pets. "We talk about kindness." The bandanas were one of the art projects created by the Art of Kindness Camp students. Lady Mary took approximately a dozen of the gifts back to her friends at the Macon County Animal Control and Care Center. Students with the Art of Kindness Camp had been creating artwork with plans to give it away. Isaac Pyle, 7, understood when he signed up for the class that he wouldn't be keeping his art projects. "It's nice and it's kind," he said, "and I love art." The kids met for 2 hours on Tuesday mornings throughout June. This month, the focus changes to the techniques of drawing. The Art of Kindness was designed to raise awareness that art can spread joy, according to Jamie Foley, executive director for the Decatur Area Arts Council. "It can make your community a better place to live," she said. "We want to spread joy where we live." Shannon Cook, artist and instructor, has been teaching the children art skills, but also the importance of kindness through the projects. "It's something that they would give back to the community," she said. "It brings joy to people and connects us." The first project was a colorful mural depicting an underwater sea. The tie-dye bandanas were created the following week. The kids got to keep one, and the rest were donating to the animal shelter, Cook said. Greeting cards were also made using leaf printing techniques. The final day of camp included painting small rocks with the intention of randomly leaving them in the neighborhoods. "It always makes you happy to see one," Cook said. Paul Lighty, director for the Decatur Memorial Foundation, was able to find a place for the mural at the Decatur Memorial Hospital and recipients for the homemade cards. "We're just trying to increase not only our community involvement and also our patient experience," he said. "This brings a lot of positivity." Pediatric patients will see the mural. Patients in the cardiac rehabilitation department may receive the card signed with positive notes after a difficult session. "We would be happy to take the cards to the patients," Lighty said. Blue Mound, Meridian to move classes to Stonington. Tornado blasted the elementary school roof, by Scott Perry. Blue Mound. Meridian School District kindergarten through fifth grade students will attend classes at the former Stonington Elementary School during the 2026-27 academic year, district officials announced. The need for a temporary relocation comes after a June 17th tornado ripped off large chunks of the Meridian Elementary School roof, exposing the classrooms below to water damage from the torrential rains that accompanied the storm. "We are so incredibly thankful for the Stonington Community Center and Tom May," the district said in its announcement. "This opportunity and facility will afford our students and staff the most normal school year possible given the circumstances." The school serves 450 elementary students. The district said a news release that the building is being prepared for the upcoming school year. Efforts include a thorough cleaning of the entire facility, along with updates to flooring and replacement of ceiling tiles in select areas. Transportation for students will remain unchanged from previous years. Families who need to drop off or pick up students in Blue Mound will continue to have that option at Meridian Elementary School. Students will then be transported by shuttle bus to the Stonington campus. The district will host an open house at the Stonington facility in early August, once preparations have been completed, giving students and families an opportunity to tour the building before the start of classes. While most students will attend school in Stonington, the district said its preschool program will remain at Meridian Elementary School. Officials noted that the district will continue to have access to the pre-K classrooms, cafeteria, and gymnasium at the Blue Mound campus, allowing preschool students to remain in their current location. Supreme Court. Justices reward Trump's power play. High Court backed firing of federal regulators, cutting health research, by Andrew Chung and John Kruzel. Reuters. The U.S. Supreme Court ended Donald Trump's quest Tuesday to narrow who can be considered a citizen if born in the United States, a harsh loss for the Republican president. But just one day before, it handed him a form of power that the dissenting justices said even English monarchs of the past did not possess. The top U.S. judicial body issued rulings on Tuesday in three important cases as it brought to a close another momentous 9-month term heavily focused on legal disputes involving Trump and his administration. The court, which has a 3-6 conservative majority, dealt Trump three big losses during the term on tariffs, birthright citizenship, and his bid to fire a member of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. But it also continued to back his aggressive use of executive authority, vastly expanding the power of the presidency. The Trump administration has pushed a robust vision of executive power, which the court has largely embraced, George Mason University law professor Robert Luther III said. Serious disruption. In his second term as president, Trump pushed to expand his powers in domestic affairs and foreign policy, drawing numerous legal challenges. While these cases have reached the Supreme Court, it generally has been highly deferential to Trump, avoiding direct confrontation with the norm-shattering president on all but his most audacious assertions of executive authority. The exceptions to that general trend are cases in which the president's position was so far removed from any conceivable legal justification, the Supreme Court was unwilling to follow quite that far, or in which the Supreme Court seemed to fear serious disruption to the markets or broader economy, Syracuse University College of Law professor Jenny Breen said. The Supreme Court's workload this term has been marked to an unusual degree with cases involving the president, with much of the action occurring on an emergency basis on its so-called shadow docket. In such cases, the justices often make rapid and highly consequential decisions outside their regular process, without extensive briefing and oral arguments held in public, and typically with little explanation of their legal rationale. The conservative majority backed Trump in most of these cases, letting him implement key policies, while challenges to their legality played out in lower courts. In such cases, during this term, the court let him carry out aggressive immigration raids that can target individuals based on their race or language, cut National Institutes of Health grants for research related to racial minorities or LGBT people, and bar passport applications from selecting the sex reflecting their gender identities for the document. Beyond emergency cases, the court also resolved cases in Trump's favor in the traditional manner, after extensive deliberation, briefing, and arguments, including by acceding to Trump's efforts to restrict immigration. The court often deferred to the president on matters such as immigration and national security. Last week, the court's conservatives gave Trump and his administration three victories over the dissent of the liberal justices, making it easier to deport people or refuse them entry, including those who have legal status in the United States. Among those rulings, the court let the administration strip hundreds of thousands of Haitian and Syrian immigrants of a humanitarian legal status, protecting them from deportation. Humphrey's executor. On Monday, the court's conservatives delivered a watershed ruling that some legal experts said boosts Trump's power under the U.S. Constitution more than any prior ruling in the history of the Supreme Court. They freed Trump to fire leaders at independent government regulators, placing the levers of government's executive power firmly in his hands. In the process, the court overturned a precedent dating to 1935 in a case called Humphrey's Executor v. United States that insulated such officials from at-will firings by a president. Overturning Humphrey's executor for years was a priority of the U.S. conservative legal movement. Critics of the move said the court's action will lead to further politicization of federal agencies that Congress had sought to entrust to nonpartisan experts, as well as to broader partisan swings in American regulatory policy. The dissenting liberal justices said the ruling handed too much power to the president, allowing him even to act in defiance of laws. The court gives the president a power unknown even to the English crown against which the founders revolted, Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote, joined by fellow liberal justices Elena Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson. Church bishop running for council. Sanders looks to build Decatur back up way it used to be. By Tony Reed. Decatur. Pastor Deloyd Sanders believes all things in Decatur can be bright and beautiful again. And that's why the 60-year-old bishop with Perfected Praise Ministries in the city has announced he is running for a seat on the Decatur City Council. Sanders was raised in Decatur and remembered it fondly after moving out of state to work, before employment brought him back 5 years ago. Now working his day job as a material supervisor at the city's Mueller Water Products Company. But when he did return and saw what Decatur looks like now, he thought long and hard about whether he wanted to go home again. Mueller brought me back here, but if I was to be transparent and honest, I literally almost passed up the opportunity because I saw how bad Decatur had become, said Sanders. I was driving down streets with all the houses boarded up, debris in the yards, and with grass I called the wilderness experience, weeds all over the place, and just looking bad. Sanders has faith the city council can do a whole lot more to fix these issues and wants to be part of a local government more responsive to turning things around. And it's not just cleaning up battered neighborhoods that tops his agenda. He also wants to stop the city's population decline. There's people out there right now searching on how they can leave Decatur, he said. But I am like, no, don't leave Decatur. We need y'all here. We need people. We need jobs to come to Decatur. And we need people like you to stay so that we can build Decatur back up the way it used to be. The Sanders agenda for improving city life includes encouraging entrepreneurs to launch new ventures that create jobs and give people a reason to stay amid a sense of hope. We may not have many major new corporations coming in, he said, but if we have 10 entrepreneurs that will hire one or two people, that's something that will help our economy. Married for 41 years with 6 grown kids and 10 grandchildren, Sanders boasts some previous political experience, having served as a city councilman in Beloit, Wisconsin, and as a supervisor on the Rock County Board, also in Wisconsin. He said he's in the process of building a political campaign team and is heartened by the community support received so far. It's great, actually blowing my mind, he said of the public response to his venture into Decatur politics. I figured I would throw my candidacy out there and see what would happen, and wow, it has just taken off. DDB is now my campaign motto. Decatur deserves better. If you need more information or want to help, Sanders can be reached at 608-718-2648 or eldersandersnlm@gmail.com. Decatur voters will elect a mayor and fill 3 council seats next spring. Those 3 seats are held by Pat McDaniel, Dennis Cooper, and Lisa Gregory. McDaniel has announced he is running again. Illinois, Pritzker declares storm disaster, by Brendan Moore, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Tuesday issued a state disaster proclamation for 11 counties ravaged by severe weather this spring and early summer. The proclamation covers Kankakee, McLean, Stevenson, and Winnebago counties for severe weather events that took place in March and April, and Coles, Cook, Effingham, Jefferson, LaSalle, Warren, and Woodford counties for storm events over the past month. It comes amid a record stretch of severe weather in the land of Lincoln. Midway through the year, the National Weather Service has already confirmed 173 tornadoes in Illinois, the most recorded in a single year. Several communities have also sustained damage from flooding, hail, and straight-line winds. Illinois has faced unprecedented severe weather this year, and I remain committed to supporting every community, business, and family as they rebuild, Pritzker said in a statement. As communities recover, we remember the lives that were lost and hold their families and loved ones in our thoughts during this difficult time. Pritzker is scheduled to visit Effingham and Jefferson counties on Wednesday. An EF3 tornado ripped through the area on June 17th, injuring 2 people and damaging dozens of structures. He surveyed damage in Coles County earlier this month after an EF2 tornado hit. The governor also visited Kankakee County in March, days after an EF3 tornado tore through and killed 3 people. The proclamation frees up additional state resources and personnel for response and recovery operations and can facilitate requests for state and federal disaster relief. Federal resources. Communities in impacted counties, for example, can now apply for up to $250,000 through the Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, Disaster Response Program, to assist with cleanup, debris removal, and public infrastructure repairs. Pritzker said last week that he expects the state to seek additional federal assistance for the June tornadoes, either through the Federal Emergency Management Agency or Small Business Administration, though state officials are still working with local officials to assess damage and determine whether it meets eligibility for federal assistance programs. State and federal agencies completed their damage assessments in Kankakee on March 30th, but the state did not ultimately seek FEMA assistance, though the SBA did approve low-interest emergency loans for small businesses with uninsured damage. Pritzker told reporters in Chicago last week that applying for a federal disaster declaration doesn't help if there's no way that that damage estimate will get anywhere near the number necessary to qualify. The governor was critical of the Trump administration for cutting back funding for disaster relief and seemingly denying it for political reasons. A Politico analysis found Democrat-led states saw just 23% of their disaster requests granted in the first year of Trump's second term, compared to 89% for their Republican counterparts. They've raised the thresholds for getting support. They've made it harder for communities to get support, Pritzker said. It's quite disappointing, and I continue to be an advocate for maintaining the FEMA funds that were available prior, because unfortunately, climate change has now brought more disasters on a more frequent basis. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. Police. Two Hurt in Gunfire, Car Chase, by Danette Beckett, Decatur. Two men were injured by gunfire during a high-speed car chase through the streets of Decatur. According to Sergeant Philip J. Ganley with the Decatur Police Department, officers were driving southbound in the vicinity of Jasper and Garfield Streets at approximately 12:26 p.m. Tuesday when they heard gunshots. They observed two cars going at a high rate of speed northbound directly past them, one car following the other, he said. They were shooting out of the sunroof at the car in front of them. The officers immediately tried to follow the vehicles, but were unable to locate them. Video surveillance footage was gathered from area buildings. Multiple shell casings were found during the investigation, spanning from Leafland and Lauber to Olive and Jasper Streets. Ganley said two 20-year-old men arrived at the hospital, one with a gunshot wound to the pelvic region, and the other with shards of glass embedded in various areas of his body. The suspected vehicle was recovered and found to be stolen from Chicago. The investigation is ongoing and no arrests have been made. Immigration. DOJ targets birth tourism after ruling, by Andrew Gosward, Reuters, Washington. The Justice Department has directed federal prosecutors to prioritize investigations of so-called birth tourism schemes after the Supreme Court rejected President Donald Trump's attempt to restrict birthright citizenship in the United States. A senior Justice Department official, Colin McDonald, told employees in a memo that people who come to the United States under false pretenses to give birth and secure citizenship for their child could be criminally charged under laws barring visa fraud, money laundering, identity theft, and wire fraud. The Department of Justice will zealously protect the sanctity of U.S. citizenship by investigating and prosecuting those who fraudulently exploit our immigration system, McDonald wrote in a memo Tuesday to all DOJ employees that was posted on social media. The directive came hours after the Supreme Court, in a 6-3 ruling, struck down a Trump executive order seeking to prevent children born in the United States from automatically becoming citizens if neither parent is an American citizen or a legal permanent resident. The ruling affirmed the longstanding right to citizenship for nearly all born in the U.S. The DOJ memo was an indication the Trump administration intends to continue to focus on the issue, part of its hardline approach to immigration, despite the setback at the high court. It directs federal prosecutors to work with the Department of Homeland Security on investigations. DHS, in April, ordered its investigative agents to focus on a new birth tourism initiative. Among the arguments the Justice Department made in defense of Trump's order is that birthright citizenship promotes birth tourism, whereby pregnant foreign nationals without long-standing ties to the U.S. enter the country to give birth so their children can have citizenship. FBI says Guthrie notes were fake, by Jana Winter and Steve Gorman, Reuters, Washington. Federal investigators deemed all three kidnapping-related messages that surfaced in news media reports about the disappearance of Today Show co-host Savannah Guthrie's elderly mother were fake communications, an FBI official said. The FBI assessment of inauthenticity pertains to the two ransom notes reported in early February, days after 84-year-old Nancy Guthrie vanished, and a third, more recent message from someone claiming to know the kidnappers' identities, the officials said. None of the ransom notes are believed to be genuine, the FBI officials told Reuters on Tuesday, on condition of anonymity, to discuss details of an active investigation. A second law enforcement source familiar with the matter confirmed the FBI assessment of the ransom notes. The disclosure that the FBI discounted the veracity of the three notes, two of which were widely reported to have been communications from kidnappers, seemed to raise doubts about investigators' fundamental premise that Nancy Guthrie was abducted for ransom to begin with. A spokesperson for the Pima County Sheriff's Office, which is leading the overall investigation, declined to comment, citing its agreement to refer all inquiries regarding ransom notes to the FBI. "We don't have any updates other than this is still an active investigation," the sheriff's spokesperson, Angelica Carrillo, said. She added that DNA samples and video evidence collected in the case remain under forensic analysis. All three messages in question initially were delivered to various media outlets, including celebrity news site TMZ.com, before they were turned over to authorities for review. Savannah Guthrie, 54, longtime co-anchor of the NBC Morning News program Today, referenced ransom demands in video messages she and her siblings posted on social media, urging kidnappers to open a direct line of communication with her family and pleading for her mother's return, saying in one video, "We will pay." Cryptocurrency payment went unclaimed. The elder Guthrie, who was in frail health with limited mobility, was last seen alive January 31st at her home in Tucson, Arizona, after spending an evening with her older daughter, Annie Guthrie, and son-in-law. The FBI, which took the lead in examining purported ransom notes or other communications from suspects in the case, previously declined to say publicly whether any of the messages under review were considered credible. Investigators determined the first two originated from the same sender, the official told Reuters, though how that conclusion was drawn was not specified. The first note, according to TMZ, demanded a sum in the millions to be paid in cryptocurrency and set two deadlines for payment, February 5th and February 9th. The second note was reported by NBC News last week to have referred to Guthrie at that point as having died, without making an apology or demanding any payment in return for her body. In a bid to test the authenticity of the first note and possibly trace the ransom demands back to the perpetrators, the FBI early on deposited a small amount of cryptocurrency in an account as instructed in the message. But the money was left untouched in the account, the official said. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review dated Thursday, July 2nd, 2026. Please stay tuned.